A very good Monday. Welcome to today's edition of the Maya Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm your host, Lori Boyer. In addition to feature agricultural news reports, I'll bring you national and regional agricultural news headlines. And I'll start with regional ag news right after this.
This segment is sponsored by Bee Hero, the leading almond pollination provider. Don't leave pollination to chance. Be sure, be precise, be Hero. Call Charlie Phillips, VP Sales at 559-467-9699. Bee Hero, superior bees, superior pollination.
The California State Board of Food and Agriculture will discuss a recently released U.S. Department of Agriculture Resilient Food Systems Infrastructure Grant Program at its meeting tomorrow. The meeting will be held from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the California Department of Food and Agriculture. The meeting is also available via Zoom. The USDA's Resilient Food System Infrastructure Program is a great opportunity to not only further California's Ag Vision strategy of fostering climate-smart, resilient, and regenerative food systems, but also enhancing processing options for local and regional producers within the supply chain, according to CDFA Secretary Karen Ross. She says this funding will directly benefit California's farmers and ranchers, with an emphasis on small, underserved business owners, as well as historically underserved producers. Invited speakers include Tricia Kovacs, USDA Agricultural Marketing Service, Trish Kelly, Valley Vision, Jamie Johansson, California Farm Bureau, Tim Johnson, California Rice Commission, Emily Rooney, Agricultural Council of California, Michael Dimmock, Roots of Change, Paul Towers, Community Alliance of Family Farmers, and other invited speakers. The USDA Resilient Food System Infrastructure Program will assist states in building resilience in the middle of the supply chain and strengthen local and regional food systems by creating new revenue streams for producers. The overall goal of the RFSI, as outlined by the USDA, is to create more and better processing options for producers across the specialty crops, dairy, grain, and other food sectors by targeting gaps and opportunities within the agricultural supply chain. CDFA will begin planning and public outreach to submit a state plan to the USDA in August. Once approved, CDA will make competitive grants available for eligible entities that include agricultural producers, processors, nonprofit organizations, local tribal governments, as well as schools, hospitals, and universities. The California State Board of Food and Agriculture advises the governor and CDFA secretary on agricultural issues and consumer needs. The board conducts forums that bring together their local, state, and federal government officials, agricultural representatives, and citizens to discuss current issues and concerns to California agriculture. For more information on tomorrow's meeting, or if you need a link for Zoom, contact the California Department of Food and Agriculture. California Farm Bureau President Jamie Johansson is calling for increasing the pace and scale of forest management, including employing livestock grazing and prescribed burns to reduce dangerous fuels and protect communities and the environment. He testified in a Washington, D.C. hearing before a federal land subcommittee of the House Committee on Natural Resources and told the panel, given the extensive number of wildfire-related impacts in California, California Farm Bureau has a vested interest in quality and quantity of forest management activities. Also from the California Farm Bureau today, they are calling on the state to improve mechanisms for disbursing disaster relief payments for damages suffered in devastating 2023 storms. Testifying recently before a joint informational hearing of the California Assembly Agriculture Committee and the Assembly Emergency Management Committee, Farm Bureau Administrator Jim Houston said that the storm impacts have been especially hard on small farmers, including many that may lack insurance. He says there is no good mechanism for people to recover their losses. U.S. Representatives Jim Acosta of California, Ronnie Jackson of Texas, Angie Craig of Minnesota, Don Bacon of Nebraska, and Don Davis of North Carolina have introduced House Resolution 3419, the Foreign Animal Disease Prevention, Surveillance, and Rapid Response Act of 2023, to make critical investments for the agriculture industry to help prevent, respond to, and mitigate foreign animal diseases. Congressman Acosta says protecting livestock operations and having the tools to prevent animal disease outbreak is critical to keeping our food supply chain intact. This legislation will boost our nation's efforts to prevent, detect, and respond to animal disease outbreaks that threaten American agriculture and therefore our nation. The 2018 Farm Bill funded three essential animal disease prevention and management programs, the National Animal Health Laboratory Network, the National Animal Disease Preparedness and Response Program, and the National Animal Vaccine and Veterinary Countermeasures Bank to help bolster USDA's prevention, preparedness, and response capabilities for foreign animal diseases. This bipartisan bill would strengthen these programs and ensure their survivability over the upcoming five-year Farm Bill period. The bipartisan bill is supported by several agricultural groups, including the American Farm Bureau Federation, the Livestock Marketing Association, the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, and the National Milk Producers Federation. California's lemon growing regions are facing unique situations this season, driven by common events of high frequent precipitation and cooler temperatures. District 1, the San Joaquin Valley growing region, began harvest in late October and is now coming to an end. Rain amounts during the primary harvest window caused the lemons to naturally grow larger. The frequency of storms delayed picking and prolonged time on tree, perpetuating a size challenge. The weather conditions also impacted the grade of the fruit, reducing a percentage of fancy. As a result, there has been downward price pressure on large size choice grade lemons, according to John Carter, vice president of citrus with Limoneria. However, fancy grade lemons across sizes and smaller size choice grade lemons have noticed a price increase in the past 4 weeks as supplies have been relatively less abundant. The early picks of District 2, which is a coastal region, were impacted similarly to District 1, but the picture looks different for the portion of the crop expected to be picked early to midsummer. They will see more diverse sizing during this period, according to Carter. The rainfall came earlier within the season, while fruit for the summer pick was developing. In addition, temperatures have remained cool, and the fruit has essentially been in an air-conditioned environment. Lemons in District 3 typically begin harvest around late August to early September. It's difficult to provide a reliable estimate at this point as initial information has been mixed. In addition to the U.S. and Canada, Asia is a primary market for California lemons. Demand from North America has been steady and demand from Asia started to rebound this winter. However, post-COVID demand isn't up to the levels it was before, according to Carter. While California is still in the midst of its own season, imported fruit is starting to arrive in North America. Canada has received the first lemons from South Africa. The first arrivals from Argentina to the U.S. and Canada are beginning, and volumes are expected to be similar or slightly higher compared to last year. Chile's arrivals to North America will start later in June, and volumes are expected to increase compared to last year as the country is rebounding from cold weather last year. Mexico's lemon season is expected to start at the end of July into early August. When asked about how much competition is expected from the import season, Carter said it will certainly be dynamic as there are global sourcing and market destinations in play. It ultimately depends on the sizing and the grade of the fruit that arrives. It's a little too early to tell right now, and he says regardless of competition, they will look to do their part in promoting lemons as part of the Catch the Citrus Wave campaign for the summer. As California builds rules to ensure that much of the state's packaging is either cut or recycled, packaging producers, environmental groups, and other interested parties can provide input to help design Senate Bill 54, which are statutes and regulations regarding packaging. Governor Gavin Newsom signed Senate Bill 54 into law last year to build California's circular economy for packaging and plastic food service ware. The law requires 25% less plastic packaging, 65% of all single-use plastic packaging be recycled, and 100% of packaging be recyclable or compostable. For more information, go to the State of California website.
AgroPlante is the leading manufacturer in specialty products. AgroPlante formulates products that rise to the challenge of today's growing conditions. Saline and sodic soils reduce crop yield and cause significant crop losses. AgroPlante developed Cation EX5 Plus with growers in mind to manage soil salinity. With multiple years of research, Cation EX5 Plus has proven to be an excellent source of calcium and an effective soil salinity manager. Run it through drip irrigation without any issues. Simplify your application method with innovative and efficient formulations. Alleviate salinity stress with Cation EX5 Plus. AgroPlante, imagination, innovation, science in action.
Pests such as navel orangeworm, ants, spider mites, and even disease like hull rot are top of mind for many almond growers in June, with hull split right around the corner. For Naval Orange Worm, UCCE Orchard Advisor Franz Niederholzer recommends consulting right now with a pest control advisor and continuing to monitor for the pest as almonds become vulnerable to feeding and damage once whole split begins.
Usually the researchers show and experience shows that on that first spray, you maybe as they start to split around the edge, you get an edge spray on. And when they start to split, just beginning to split within the orchard, that first spray should go on. I've talked to, again, the researchers and experienced PCAs. Earlier is better than later. Don't let them get started. So, particularly with the AltaCores and the Intrepid type materials that have a long residual, a little bit early, it's the way to go. Good spray volume is important. 150, maybe 200 gallons per acre, depending upon the tree size, and slow application, slow driving speed. Those are important to getting the job done right. We have no idea how the season is going to play out, but assuming that it's going to be a tough one, I'm seeing, at least in the limited looking I'm doing, I'm seeing more moths and more eggs. That doesn't guarantee a bad worm year, but it's not a good sign. So having a plan and talking to your PCA, considering your harvest timing, this is planning way ahead, but you got to plan ahead to be ready when it happens. Talk to your processor. For your nonpareil, are you looking at the in-shell market? Are you looking at meats? The harvest timing differs between those two markets, and under high pressure years for naval orange worm, a timely harvest, relatively earlier compared to an in-shell harvest timing, going for meat production, could avoid some naval orange worm pressure. So just worth a part of the planning process.
Spider mites are another pest to monitor for in June, and it's being recommended that predators of these mites, like six-spotted thrips and predatory mites, be scouted for to assess the level of control that can be provided, especially with more orchards having moist conditions this year going into summer, which are conducive to these predators.
They can provide pretty much complete control under good conditions. On a well-managed orchard with plenty of orchard moisture, six-spotted thrips are a very good predator of spider mites, of Pacific mites, and two-spotted mites. They don't mind at all webbing. They'll dive right in there. They'll eat the eggs. They'll eat the adults, the juveniles. They have, research by UC David Haviland and Emily Sims up this way years ago showed that six-spotted thrips are a really important part of a program, of a integrated control program. And in a year where money's tight, and if you're, you may end up, when during harvest dry down, you may end up with a miticide, but you can delay it till then. Or some growers tell me they don't put one on just because they're using softer materials for worm control, and their beneficials are, they're taking care of their beneficials and they're getting good results. So I don't have the thresholds in front of me, but UC's got a great guideline at the UCIPM website that shows when you see the number of leaves with the beneficials on them, as well as the mites, the pest mites, you can put off spraying or delay treating with a miticide. So there are guidelines out there through the UCIPM website that can help you make that decision.
In an effort to maintain as conducive an environment as possible for insect predators to thrive, in the case of spider mite predators and other insect predators, it's recommended to refrain from using broad-spectrum insecticides when possible.
Pyrethroids in particular, when you're worrying about bugs, two bugs, leaf-footed bugs, there's not that much else you can do. But if you can avoid the pyrethroids, that's a big step. Early miticides, the sort of prophylactic materials that we did traditionally, years ago, where you spray in May to control agromechia, then you pretty much wipe out the pest, and the beneficials have got nothing to feed on, so they move off. And then when the agromech wears off, 60 days later, the pest can come back in, and it takes a while for the beneficials to build back up, and you can cause yourself trouble there. So primarily, staying away from letting the beneficials come up and staying away from broad spectrum materials that harm the beneficials.
You're listening to My Ag Life. I'm Taylor Charlstrom.
This segment is sponsored by Bee Hero, the leading almond pollination provider. Don't leave pollination to chance. Be sure, be precise, be Hero. Call Charlie Phillips, VP Sales at 559-467-9699. Be Hero, superior bees, superior pollination.
USA is extending deadlines for the Emergency Relief Program Phase 2 and the Pandemic Assistance Revenue Program to July 14th. The goal is to give producers more time to apply for the assistance. Also, USDA's Farm Service Agency is partnering with 9 organizations to provide educational and technical assistance to agricultural producers and provide assistance in completing an ERP Phase 2 application. Farm Service Agency recognizes that there is a learning curve for producers applying for the new revenue-based programs, and they want to make sure producers have the time they need to apply for assistance, according to FSA Administrator Zach Duchenow. Partnering with these organizations through cooperative agreements provides additional assistance to producers who need help with ERP Phase 2. The groups include Farmers Legal Action Group Incorporated, the North-South Institute, Rural Coalition, and others. For more information on the 9 organizations and our contact information, go to fsa.usda.gov. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey is in with the season's first look at the condition of the cotton crop.
Our first look at cotton condition for 2023, a little bit more encouraging than last year, but still some hints of drought trouble across the southern Great Plains. 48% of the U.S. cotton rated good to excellent on May 28th, 13% very poor to poor. Compare that to a year ago when we were just 44% good to excellent, 18% very poor to poor. Texas, of course, really helps to drive that national cotton number. So it is a concern that 21% of the cotton crop rated very poor to poor in Texas in this initial report. That is reflecting mostly drought. We have seen this before coming off a major drought like we had last year. It's tough to replenish the moisture, and drought may still be an issue in the southern Great Plains for 2023.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey. USDA Secretary for Trade and Foreign Agricultural Affairs Alexis Taylor will lead an upcoming trade mission to Japan on June 5th through the 8th. The delegation will include a large representation of American agriculture, including businesses, state agriculture departments, and commodity groups. As one of the world's leading economies, Japan is an important market for U.S. food and agricultural exports. Taylor says it's an honor to lead this delegation as they work to expand their bilateral trade relationship even further. Japan is the fourth largest market for U.S. food and agricultural exports. In 2022, American exports matched the previous record of $14.6 billion. Exports of specific products like soybeans, dairy, and others reach new highs. The United States is vital to ensuring food security in Japan, with almost a quarter of Japan's food and ag imports coming from American exporters. Trips like this are important for engaging directly with potential buyers and Japanese industry experts. People working in production agriculture spend a lot of time out in the sun, and their risks are high for skin cancer. While the warm sun often feels good on the skin, it's important to take steps to protect yourself from overexposure and reduce skin-related risks. The Upper Midwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center says appropriate sun protection includes covering the whole body with clothing, wearing a hat with a full brim, having adequate sunscreen coverage, and sunglasses. As part of its safety checklist, they remind farmers to wear long-sleeve shirts and pants when out in the sun. Hats should be wide-brimmed and all the way around the head. An appropriate sunscreen should be worn anywhere between SPF 30 to 50 and should be reapplied every 2 hours or more, frequently with heavy sweating. Also, it is advised to wear sunglasses and check skin regularly, as well as talking to a doctor about any changes you may see. Environmental Protection Agency Administrator Michael Reagan on the recent Supreme Court decision regarding the Waters of the U.S. rule.
I am deeply disappointed that the court seemingly is taking away EPA's ability that has been standing for 50 years, but we're going to have to take a close look at that.
Reagan stressed the importance of wetlands for water quality.
We know that wetlands are nature's water filters, and we know that many of our coal communities and many of our communities rely significantly on wetlands to reduce pollution, to reduce runoff, so that we can have good quality drinking water. There's no doubt that we are very disappointed, but we're going to take a closer look at what the ruling actually means. But let me be clear, we're going to continue to work as hard as we can to follow the law, but also to protect all communities and provide safe, affordable drinking water for every community in this country. That is our goal.
The Supreme Court ruled in favor of the Sackett family, who challenged a 2015 EPA Waters of the U.S. rule. While the ruling doesn't immediately apply to the new WOTUS rule by the Biden administration, the court did say the new rule would not stand judicial scrutiny.
Introducing My Ag Life Jobs, the pathway to career opportunities in California agriculture. Whether you're currently in pursuit of employment or searching for talent as an employer, our network serves as the resource to connections in the agricultural industry. Plant roots in your career and embark today by exploring jobs.myaglife.com. That's jobs.myaglife.com.
Don't miss your opportunity to attend the only event of its kind taking place this summer. Join us on June 21st, 2023 in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event. The Crop Consultant Connect event will bring you and many of your independent crop consultant peers together. You'll also get access to virtual CE hours as an exclusive thank you for attending this event. Your registration includes breakfast, lunch, coffee, snacks, as well as a wealth of information you're able to glean from this experience. Please visit progressivecrop.com for more information. Join us on June 21st in Modesto, California for the Crop Consultant Connect event.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
That will wrap up today's show. You've been listening to the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Lori Boyer. From all of us here at the JCS Marketing Team, thank you for listening.